Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guys, gotta get real. When real guys talk real sports, we will. Ray, Marcus, Gay, Saint, gotta get real. These are the kind of guys I need to have in the locker room. The championship type guys. Hey guys, you just gotta recognize I gotta pay the money, I gotta keep it. Everybody has an opinion. They came with so much bravado and so much swagger. We're not gonna make it. Sometimes you gotta clear space where there's no space. I can't argue with LeBron with this. You don't have a good time with execution, right? He burned it, a lot of bridges. He's gonna be hated in Chicago. He's gonna be hated in Cleveland. He's gonna be hated in New York, and that's what I'm excited to see.
Now I blame it on Nintendo. I blame it on the fact that they never played against a team that's gonna be as dominant as this team could be.
The true villain team. The team that everybody wants to smack in the mouth every time they play it. Yeah. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. RSG, Renegade Radio, you are now in tune. This is the place where sports, politics, pop culture, art, music, whatever you can think of, we're standing at that intersection. As you look around at that intersection, you're going to see three cats standing there. We the corner boys holding you down, giving you a tour, the ins and outs, helping you figure out your way home. And that's who you're rolling with right now. Marcus, the game changer with you. As always, I got the three-man booth in full effect. D. Wills is in the house. Holler at the people.
Straight cash, homie.
Homage. Homage. Homage to Red.
Gotta pay homage to the man.
We also got D. Newell, a.k.a. Field T Sports PhD, holding us down.
Like a young Dale Ellis. Got him triple threat position, ready to go, man.
They got his shot pocket ready. Ready to put one up. Hey, so we gonna get into it. We're gonna take you around as we always do about this time for the next 2 hours, 8:30 to 10:30 Central Time. You are locked in. And we're gonna hold you down. We're gonna take you through the sports scene. Again, we're gonna show you all those intersections. Give a different opinion than what you may get from the national media because, you know, lucky for us, we ain't got no connections to nobody. So we can say what we want. You're going to hear things that you may not hear on traditional sports radio, and that's why you come here, because you're going to get that perspective. If you want to join in the conversation, you're always welcome. We always welcome the RSG listeners out there to join in with us. The number to call in is 1-347-989-0844. Again, that's 1-347-989-0844. Feel free to hop on at any point during the show. Kick a hot 16. Again, we just ask that you don't come weak, because if you're weak, you're going to get the Mutombo finger. And you don't want that. You don't want that. We haven't had to do that to anybody, but you'll get it. Deke will pop up, and he'll tell you, get that stuff out of here. But our listeners come correct. Our listeners come correct. So let's get into it, fellas. You know, we're going to kick off the show as we always do with the funky editorial. This week we got a interesting topic that we're going to get into, so let's go ahead and kick that off.
Fellas, the one thing we need to say, can we say it, y'all? Melvin, Jimmy, Coleman, Ryan, say it. Everybody want to get funky one more time.
Word. Now, since the last time we spoke, we got together. Last time we had an opportunity to share our opinions with our listeners out there. The NFL free agent frenzy was just getting going. I mean, it was just starting to warm up and get humming. Since then, in the last 7 days, since the last time we checked in with y'all out there, it done got crazy. I mean, it done got flat out crazy. So, you know, there have been a lot of moves, a lot of things going on. The team that has probably made the most noise as far as signing big names and making major trades and big moves has been the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, there have been some national pundits, local pundits, out there, writers, radio folk, who have tried to draw parallels between what the Eagles are doing and what the Heat are doing. And there have even been fans out there, you know, folks that I talk to who are saying, well, let's see if the Eagles get the type of hate that the Heat got and vice versa. So what we're going to get into right now is that valid? Is that a valid comparison? Are the Eagles the NFL's version of the Miami Heat? I'm going to throw that out to the guys, and I'm going to put it on the table, and we're going to go pit bull style. Whoever want to jump on it, jump on it. So we're going to pit bull on this one. Bam, it's on the table. Who's jumping on that one first?
I guess I'll go first. It's not the same thing, because I think what fueled the Heat was a couple things. It was something that people realized was coordinated. So it was, all this drama was built up, and it was coordinated. And the thing about basketball is just, it's so much, you see the individual faces. And so it felt, you know, people have you going this long, drawn-out saga, and then, you know, the build-up, and then, you know, the decision and all that. And this didn't come away together like that. And then after it came together, I mean, other than the little tweet that we had by Young, for the most part, you know, guys are just comments. So it's something that was created by the organization, not by the individuals. So the people who are getting the credit for putting this together are, you know, Young GM that they got in Philly, and the coach, Andy Reid, are in their organizations credited for doing it. It's not the individuals who orchestrated it. So, you know, I think it doesn't come with that kind of stuff. Football is also different. Football's got a lot more moving parts than basketball. You can't control the game in a lot of different ways. And so, you know, if getting all the best players, as I said, was, would guarantee you a championship in football, then Dan Snyder would have won 4 or 5 Super Bowls by now. So, you know, spending money and getting players in, you know, football's a lot about chemistry and continuity and how the pieces play together.
Plus one on that one, brother. Plus one. Do you know, you want to take a stab at it?
Yeah, I will. You know, I liken it to, you know, say you wear a size 13, but you're in the shoe store, and there's a size 11 available, and it's on clearance, and you think you might try to stick your feet in there to cramp them in. I mean, that's what I see in this forced comparison. You know, we got the Heat, and now we got the Eagles making some moves, and I don't see a whole lot of comparison, but I think it's really invalid. You know, first, I mean, you know, Devon covered a lot of really strong points. An additional one is the Eagles, their core is still there. Assuming they get DeSean Jackson back, their core is starting with Michael Vick. And they're adding a lot of great pieces, but at the same time, you're not going to see a team that is completely transformed like the Heat were. So that's the biggest reason I don't see a huge comparison. And like Devon mentioned, football is just so much different. You know, I mean, just from a logistics standpoint, you put 11 guys out there on the field, where in basketball you're putting less than half in 5. And so when you change 60-80% of your lineup, yeah, I mean, you can certainly have a different product out there. Football is so different in that regard.
I think you hit an excellent point, D. Newell. When you spoke about, and Devon touched on this too, how the moves and the acquisitions and everything was orchestrated, I think, is where you got to start when you start to make a comparison. you know, I thought it was fishy at the time. I didn't quite see it right away. I can't take credit and say I saw it right away. But I remember when the Heat completely gutted their roster. I mean, they were just giving cats away on draft night that June before free agency hit. And they were down to like two guys, which I think was like Chalmers and Wade. That was the only two guys they had on their roster. So you don't do that. You don't do something like that unless you know something's coming down the line. You know what I mean? You just don't. So in that sense, you know, Pat Riley knew something. D-Wade must have whispered something in his ears. It was a very different situation. Also, what I think is very different, you know, because the other thing, and this other thing I want to get y'all opinions on, that I think people who are maybe Heat fans, are looking at the media like, shouldn't y'all be vilifying the Eagles the same way y'all vilified the Heat? I want y'all to dig into that for a minute, because I think sometimes people forget why people felt a certain way about the Heat. Now, I know you guys may not necessarily be in those camps, deeply entrenched in on one side or the other as far as how you feel about the Heat. But I think you guys have a good perspective on why folks, national media, just your regular Gen Pop fan, how they feel or why they feel the way they feel, whether they're on one side of the fence or the other side of the fence towards the Heat, and how that may not necessarily be the same as it is with the Eagles. Again, I'm just going to throw that down. And one of y'all could jump on it. And why don't we let D. Newell jump on this one first?
Yeah, I think it's a lot different because, I mean, just the way that the Heat came out the gate with the concert and claiming to win 6, 7, 8 championships. You know, I mean, you look at the Eagles and their two main, I mean, their main guys they're bringing in are very humble guys. You know, you look at Nnamdi. You know, he didn't want to talk about himself, man. He wanted to talk about what he was doing in some of his charities. You know, Michael Vick, you know, the new reform Mike Vick is also a very humble Mike Vick. You know, someone that has won over a lot of people who are very critical of him in terms of his legal issues just by the way that he's approached the game. So I think the perception of the Eagles are much different than the Heat. And again, you know, Both sports are team sports, but football is that much more of a team sport. So that's why the perception and the attention and everything else is going to be quite a bit different. And I think one of those reasons is Andy Reid. You know, Andy Reid, you know, he's been coaching for a while in one city. He's probably got, you know, probably one of the highest tenures of any NFL coach out there. I mean,
he's senior right now.
Yeah, so, I mean, his experience and his clout within that organization is probably going to, you know, create that environment where it's a team-first, humble type of environment. You know, let your play do the talking.
So one thing I want to touch on, and again, because I think sometimes people, I think what a lot of people are still trying to wrap their minds around with that Heat team is why people dislike them in general. You know, a lot of people that are pro-Heat don't understand why people are anti-Heat. And I think you kind of got into that a little bit with the way that they came out and how that is contrasted to this Eagles team. What I will say about this Eagles team real quick before I let D. Wills jump in and give his opinion is that one thing that was interesting to me was the most fragile cat jumped out talking the biggest talk, which was Vince Young. You know, you got the most mentally fragile cat on the team jumping out talking to We the Dream Team. Man, you finna hold a clipboard for the next 6 months. Just chill before you go talking and tweeting, you know, above your pay grade. Just fall back for a moment. You learn the offense, you know, figure out how to hold that clipboard just right. Find a good cap to wear and chill out. I'm going to toss it to D. Will.
I think, yeah, I mean, y'all hit all those good points. And part of it is just why we're reacting, because Miami fans whine. And so the fans whine, the players whine. That's not – again, the reason why Philadelphia is not good because it's the organization has developed a reputation of how they do business. It's a different kind of sport. The core, for the most part, when you think about people like Michael Vick, Andy Reid, through the management, the ownership, are perceived as folks who've always just done it the right way. Pat Riley, I love him. Great coach, has done some great things as a president. You know, always seem to be like, when you look at Pat Riley, he's always come across like Wall Street, like Douglas. You know,
Gordon Gekko.
Gordon Gekko. You know what I'm saying? And that's the image of it. And so all that part of it personifies it. And again, I think because football is so much more a team game where unsung players have to contribute to it, it's a total team effort. You're just going to be perceived in the same way. And I think, you know, people are looking at how well they've done. But I think some other teams did very well, and it just puts them amongst the leader of the pack, but it doesn't clearly make them the favorite. I mean, I'm looking at some of these other deals that some folks have done, and they're not as much of a kind of a splash, but they are solid for what they need and are going to make them, because of what they already have, even as potent as the Eagles. So I think, you know, I think people still know that, and this is the excitement of football right now. I mean, it's the most popular sport. And so it's getting a lot of attention. But it's just one of those things that football just has that way of just fizzling a lot of this stuff. And because it takes so much to win a game, you can't just go out there and have LeBron hit 50 and win. You just can't have D-Ray take over. It takes too many things that have to go right for you to win on every play. And I think people just understand that.
Excellent point. Hey, the other thing I think, There's no concert, there's no light show, and then there's the constant pretending that that didn't happen. I think that's what bothers me about the Heat. I have never had a problem with cats celebrating, showboating, gloating, high-stepping, signing footballs during the game, grabbing the Chili's pom-poms, eating popcorn, putting on Hall of Fame jackets. I love all of that. I dislike that part of the NFL because they cut back on it. They curb it. I've never been one to dislike guys who are boastful, who have that personality and let that personality show. And if you want to lay down a guarantee, lay down a guarantee. I didn't have a problem with Jason Terry getting a championship tattoo. I had no problem with that because he didn't deny that he got it. He didn't act like it wasn't there. He didn't act like when stuff got tough that, it wasn't what it was. You know, he didn't try to play it off like it wasn't what it was. He got that for a reason, and he was very overt and open and honest about why he got it and about how he was going to get it removed if they didn't win because it didn't make sense to have it. Mm-hmm. What irked me about LeBron and D-Wade and Chris Bosh is they spent a lot of the season backtracking, saying, well, that's not what we meant when we didn't think it was going to be that easy and, you know, this, that, and the other. And it's like, if you're going to come out and say you're going to win six, you know, not six, not seven, not eight, then be on that all season. Just be consistent about that and say, yeah, if you're going to be brash and arrogant, be brash and arrogant all the time.
That's why Rex Ryan.
Right. Exactly. That's why I don't have a problem with the Jets or Rex Ryan. I don't have a problem with that. If that's who you are, be that. What I have a problem is I felt that he was ingenuine. And that's what I don't see with this Eagles team. You know, and again, other than Vince Young coming out saying a little dream team comment, which, again, wasn't a big deal, I just thought it was funny because it's like, you shouldn't be holding a clipboard, Cat Daddy. Fall back.
That's right.
But.
You know, and everybody knows the phone call already went into him.
Right, right.
People about to shut up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, nah, we don't need that. You know, we don't need right. that. And so, you know, and I think with the Heat situation, I think that's, in my opinion, why a lot of fans are like, look, man, you know, if y'all going to be arrogant and brash and y'all going to be, you know, those type of guys, be those type of guys all the time. Just be that all the time. And don't try and backtrack. Don't try and be something else. Don't try and act like it didn't happen. Don't try and say we took it out of context. You know what I mean? Like, those are things that the Heat try to get us to believe. Those, you know, the leaders of that team try to, well, y'all taking it out of context. Y'all blowing this out of proportion. Y'all making a big deal out of nothing. You know,
instead of owning up to, yeah, you know, we had that, and, yeah, we hit a few bumps in the road, but we're going to get it together, you know, instead of saying, you know, and owning and being like, yeah, we still plan on winning 6 or 7 championships, you know, we still got some work to do. And being able to embrace what you said instead of running from it and being like, yeah, well, you know, we actually didn't think it was going to be that easy and this, that, and the other. Actually, you came out like you did. And all that's all we got to go off of is your actions, you know, and what you gave us, you know. It's like they tell the people on Real World, you know, the camera can only use what you gave them.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? They always talk, you know, at the Real World reunions, when they had a Real World reunions, they always talk about, well, they made me look like this, or they made me look like that. And all the other cast members are always like, hey, the camera can only use, they can only use what you gave them.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with the Heat, man. You know?
I agree with you, because I think that D-Wade and LeBron and Bosh, they came out with the concert and all the big talk and, you know, taking ownership in terms of the free agency and kind of, you know, making the direction they were going to go in. But then they saw the other side of the coin. You know, I liken it to Hulk Hogan all of a sudden becoming Hollywood Hogan, the bad guy. You're not a bad guy. You're not a bad guy. You can't play that role. And it's tough for me to say this because I'm a huge LeBron fan and I turned into a Heat fan, but I agree with your analysis, Marcus, in that they you know, it's kind of like they tested this bad boy type of water. You know, I'll put my foot in this bad boy thing, and we got too much pushback, so we're going to try to, you know, change things up. And I wasn't a fan of that either.
Yeah, because, again, like I said, you know, I talked a little trash when I played sports. I still talk trash when I play sports. That's fun. That's the fun part of doing it, is being able to talk and banter and go back and forth. As long as you keep it respectful, it's all good, you know. But, you know, if that's what you're going to be, then be that. And be ready to back it up. You know, be ready to back it up. Be ready to own up to it. Don't, you know, and that was really – that. You know, I had no problem with LeBron going to Miami. To me, it made sense. He trying to win. You know, you want to win championships, you do what you need to do. You know, I had no problem with him leaving Cleveland. You know, the way he did it, again, to me, was like a Facebook breakup, you know. That, to me, that's what it was. It was like, you know what I'm saying, you go on Facebook and you're in a relationship with somebody and all of a sudden, you know, status changed and now y'all not in a relationship and you go on Facebook, you log on to Facebook in the morning and you find out somebody broke up with you. You know, that's what it was like for the city of Cleveland. I understand they hurt. I understand they pain. I also understand why LeBron did what he did. He could have done it in a better way. That's water under the bridge at this point. You know what I'm saying? But what I will say to the Heat fans who are dying for some sort of retribution for what they felt wrong, y'all need to blame your team. End of story.
Right.
Look at the squad. It ain't the Eagles' fault. It ain't the Yankees' fault. It ain't Notre Dame's fault. It ain't Duke's fault. It ain't the Cowboys' fault. It's the Heat's fault. All right? Every and across all sports, you find teams that people just dislike. I just named pretty much all of them that just get general hate for whatever reasons. They just get unbridled hate from people because either they get too much attention, they have a reputation that people don't like, you know, whether it's Duke, Notre Dame, the Cowboys, the Yankees, whoever. And I think the fans in Miami have never really had a team like, have never really been on that side of the coin or the sports coin where all the other fan bases can't stand your team, you know. And they've never really been on that side of the coin, so they're looking, trying to figure out, hey, why is everybody disliking our team, you know, because they've never been in that position. If they get used to it, you know, they continue to win, they'll get used to it. You know, Yankees fans, it rolls off their back. They embrace it. Cowboys fans embrace the hate. Duke fans love the hate. Notre Dame fans love the hate. You just get used to it. When you know that it's you against everybody else in the country, everybody else in the world, they don't like you. And it's not one of those things where people are usually neutral, you know, and that's where the Heat are right now. And I think for Heat fans and for that fan base, they're trying to figure that out. What will be interesting, though, is to see how, if things don't go well with this Eagles team, Philly fans don't give a damn. Philly fans keep it all the way 100. So if these cats get on the field and they ain't performing, them Philly fans ain't going to be looking at the rest of the country like, hey, get off our team back. They're going to be throwing bricks and cheesesteaks and Liberty Bells, bobbleheads, all types of stuff is going to be flying out the stands at the link. So, I think it's an interesting comparison that the national media is trying to make. But I think from a fan's perspective, it's also interesting because some of the fans are trying to make that perspective because they're trying to understand, some of the new Heat fans are trying to understand why people don't like this team. And, you know, you can look at, there's tons of examples of teams that have come together like this and people, I mean, even with the Yankees, you know, people love Jeter. People respect the hell out of Mariano. You know, Joe Torre gets a ton of respect. It's the way they went about their business. And the Heat have gone about their business in a different way. And unfortunately, it turns the people off. And as long as the Eagles continue to handle themselves in the professional manner which they have done to this point, even if the Eagles go the other way and they start acting like the Jets, as long as they stay acting like the Jets, it's all good. as long as they stay consistent with that, it's all good.
And I love your example of the Yankees because Steinbrenner never apologized for loading his team. He never apologized for bringing some of the best free agents to York and winning. He never apologized. In some ways, the Yankees did what the Heat were doing on a regular basis. And they never apologized. They never apologized for doing any of that. They just, this is what we do. And so I love your point about, you know, once you enter, it's kind of like when Puffy gave that speech when the folks didn't want to go back and get the cheesecake. And they were talking about, I quit. And so Puff was like, if you're going to walk, walk, step. If not, go get the cheesecake.
Right.
Because it's like, if you're going to be that, if you're going to walk, if you don't really want this opportunity, then walk like you mean it. Don't half walk. And LeBron didn't remind me of those kids out in front complaining about the fact they didn't want to go back and get that cheesecake. And that's after talking about how much they really wanted it. That's all they remind, and they just came in the moment. So, and that tells you a lot about Miami fans. The fact that Philly fans will understand that, right? For Miami fans to still be asking that question, it becomes really revealing about how much you as a fan base really understand sports.
Right.
Because Philly fans would never question. Like, the Philly fans would probably be the harshest whatever folks. They're going to be on it. So the players are highly motivated in Philly, in places like Philly, Pittsburgh, Green Bay, Chicago, New York. Because there's certain things that just don't fly. And if you ain't real, the fans are going to let you know it. That's what's bad about places like Atlanta and Miami and Arizona, where people are transplants. This is a lifestyle thing they're doing. Being at the game is part of the lifestyle. It's not a part of the way of being in that city. And they have a different approach to understanding how they view. Philly fans give everybody the middle finger right now.
they calling people asking them if they want to go to the Super Bowl with it.
That's right. Because they ride and die like that. And that's the difference when you got that kind of fan base versus what you see down in Miami. And so the whole piece makes anybody who's outside of Southern Florida just sick. Because people from real sports cities are a little bit deeper. Miami fans are like hip-hop fans today. Fans from real cities are like folks who understand true hip-hop. It's like they understand the nuance of it versus just understanding the latest beat and loving Soulja Boy. It's
right. Just, I want to hear what's hot on the radio.
I want to just hear what's hot on the radio. And that's Miami. People look at it as a place that doesn't have a lot of substance. Now, I'm not saying that's not real, but that's it. Miami has some substance since the Hurricanes was running wild. Just to be real.
Hey, and I have to agree with you on that. You know, I think LeBron would be getting murdered. I think he would be getting murdered if he were in a lot of other cities, and that team would be getting murdered if LeBron was in a Rust Belt city, where they ain't got nothing else to do in the winter, where they ain't got nothing else to do in the fall, ain't no beaches to take, ain't no clubs to go to, You know, ain't no, you know, eye candy running around to take your mind off of, you know, the fact that your sports team sucks or your main guy choked, you know. When ain't none of that other stuff going on, it's real hard to hide. And you're lucky he's in South Beach. He's lucky he took his talents in South Beach. The Philly Cats, the Eagles, again, if they don't perform, ain't no place to hide in Philadelphia in November because Johnny, who worked construction, is going to be on your ass. You know, the talk radio cats in Philly is going to be on your ass. If Vic is throwing picks, if Vic is throwing more picks than touchdowns, they're going to be on him. They're going to be on him. And if this young bum ass get in there and he throwing more picks than touchdowns, they're going to be on him too.
I'm telling you like this. You have never, ever experienced anything until you walk the gauntlet into the link in Philadelphia. I watched Green Bay. You know, Green Bay will take over a city. In a playoff game, the fourth and whatever, 26th playoff game where Favre threw it up like a punt, and then McNabb came back and hit the long fourth down.
Yeah.
Green Bay fans walked the gauntlet. It was like prison. It's like entering prison, you know what I'm saying? Entering prison. Like when folks are throwing the yellow stuff at you, that's when they're holding each other, holding their loved ones. That's real. I said, my goodness. You know, I'm Wisconsin, but I'm over there with the Philly fans, like, I'm not with you. I'm against the Eagles.
But you know, you took your Green Bay hat off.
Oh, I didn't, you know, man,
put it in his pocket.
I was a guest of Hardball, so I'm there just like hanging out with the Eagles today. Mm-hmm. You're right, man. You can't get away with that kind of stuff in a Rust Belt city or in a northern city like that. LeBron would have taken a beating if they were in any other city in the north, particularly, you know, like Chicago or anywhere else. They would have killed them. And so I think that's the difference here. And these players in Philadelphia are going to be held, like you said, accountable. Accountable.
Yeah, we got a caller on the line. We got a 773. That's my hometown. Chi-Town is in the house. I want to get him on real quick. Who we got on the line?
Man, you know who this is. What's up?
Oh, what up?
Hey, dude.
Man, L-Dog holding us down as usual. Popping through.
DirecTV, man.
Man, hey, I called DirecTV and I pimped them, dude, and they gave me a $300 credit. Quit playing.
Oh. Been pimping.
I will be talking to you offline.
Yes. And I'll tell you exactly the way you need to put it, and they will hook it up, because that's bogus that they was giving it out for free. But anyways, I was calling to tell y'all, did y'all hear about what happened at Miami Dolphins practice today?
Nah, what happened?
This is a microcosm of why I tend to ignore everybody from Miami, including Kurt Brown.
C. Brown's been hurt over this, man. He's been hurt over this. This is one of the reasons I wanted to raise this topic, because one of my best friends from college, Curtis Brown, C. Brown.
Curtis Brown.
Wide receiver, yeah. Speed demon, fast as hell. You know, this cat, man, me and him have been having a couple conversations, long conversations, in-depth conversations about this whole Heat thing. And yeah, man, he's been struggling to come to grips with why people don't like the Heat.
Well, I mean, it's like he trapped in the dungeon of Florida because, okay, this is what happened today at Dolphins practice. They were having practice. Chad Henne was the quarterback doing all of their routes and whatever. The crowd got so pissed at his poor practice. Now, we're talking about practice. They got so mad at that. That they started cheering for Kyle Orton, chanting his name. Now, if you're chanting for Kyle Orton, what kind of fan base are you? Seriously. Kyle Orton? Come on, man. This practice. So I'm done with everybody from Miami, man. I'm done. But that's it. That's all I wanted to say. I'll talk to y'all later.
All right. Appreciate the call, Hill Dog. Hey, what I will say is maybe Henne was that bad. Maybe Henne is that bad. You know, I'll give Miami Dolphin fans a little bit credit because I'm not impressed with Henny. I haven't been impressed with Henny. And Cal Orton ain't great. Cal Orton is not a world beater, but Cal Orton, in my opinion, is better than a lot of people give him credit for. And that's something that we're going to touch on later in the show is, why can't this man get no respect? I mean, he got to beat out Tim Tebow, who can barely throw a football by 8 yards. And you know, he got to battle for his job against a fullback playing quarterback. But we'll get into that later. We'll get into Orton later. But I feel you on the whole Miami thing, man. You know, I have another friend who's down in Miami, Carrion Roy, and, you know, he has an interesting take on Miami as a sports town. He's from Wisconsin, so he's from the Midwest. He's from a cold state, and, you know, he just feels that the sports fans down there is just a different – it's just a different fervor. It's just a different flavor. It's just a different atmosphere around the sports down there, man. And, again, I think it's going to take them a few years to get used to being the unlike team. But I think they'll get over it. They'll figure it out. And, you know, they got again, you live in Miami. So what? If I hate the sports team. So what? You live in Miami. Shut up. It's 80 degrees all the time. And regardless of what goes down with the Heat or with the Dolphins or whoever, you still live in Miami. So, you know, you win in that regard, even if your team is full of marshmallow hearts.
And I'll say this, if basketball wise is any indication, y'all cry over anything and fight over anything.
We won't judge the entire city of Miami off of basketball wise, because that's harsh. That's harsh. But in one of my conversations, I did liken the Heat to the Bad Girls Club. In the fact that in the sense that it's one of those things where it's so enjoyable to watch them self-destruct. That's the other reason I root for the Heat to fail, because they self-destruct so fantastically. I mean, Vosh breaking down in the tunnel was great. Like, as somebody who didn't like them, I couldn't have written a better breakdown than that. Like, it's like, okay, they lose the game, then what happens? Bosh breaks down in the tunnel. That'll be great. I want to see that happen. And it happened. He did it. And it wasn't. It is what it is, man. It's fun to watch them. It's more fun to watch them fail than it is to watch them be successful. And that's just the way it's gonna be, because they just can't handle it. They just don't know how to handle not having success. And because they don't know how to handle it, it's fun to watch them try and figure out how to, you know, lose graciously, because they just don't seem to be able to do that. So we're going to move on. We're going to keep the show going. We're going to move into five on the black-hand side. We're going to get that going real quick.
Five, five, on the black-hand side.
Yes, sir. So, for this five on the black-hand side, we're going to dig into this NFL free agency. A lot of things have developed over the last 7 days. So what we're going to do with each of our 5 points in five on the black-hand side, we're going to look at different kinds of signings. And each of us will go through and give a player that we feel best represents that signing. So we're going to go with number one. We got best signing. So the best signing out there, which team, which player got together and you feel like that was the best possible match for that particular guy in regards to that particular team? I'm going to throw it to D. Newell first and let him go ahead and jump in and see what you got, man.
All right, let me clear my throat over here. I'm going to go with McNabb. You know, we talked about that quite a bit last week. I'll give you two because, you know, McNabb's kind of a gimme. But for Minnesota to land a starting quarterback for only giving up 2 6-round draft picks, I mean, this is the same team, essentially, because for the most part they stay together. This is the same team that a lot of people picked to go to the Super Bowl the past 2 years. And I think with McNabb, they're getting a quarterback that comes with a lot less drama and a lot less issues and Favre. The other person I'd say is Tyson Clavo, the tackle for Atlanta. I mean, they were able to re-sign him for around $5 million a year. And here's a guy who's a Pro Bowl tackle. You know, I mean, you look at what they're doing down in Atlanta. I love what they did in the draft. And in free agency, they did some good things as well. But Clavo, I really liked him. I mean, I really liked him out of Wake Forest. He came out, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. And he went on draft because of some injuries and some image issues or whatnot. But, I mean, this is a guy who was on the practice squad in Denver for a couple of years and just has built himself into a first-class type of offensive lineman. So, you know, when you got a young quarterback like a Matt Ryan, a good running game, you want to keep those pieces together. So I was really happy that Atlanta kept Clavo.
Man, I thought you were going to say D'Angelo Williams. I don't know why. I just thought you was gone.
No.
D'Angelo this week. Oh, okay. All right. I'll let that one go. For the listeners out there, Phil T basically, I won't say he hates, but he really dislikes D'Angelo Williams. At this point in D'Angelo Williams' life.
My blood pressure going up here. Bring that
up. I'm going to let that one go. D. Wills, who you got? Best signer.
I can't knock the McNabb signing, so I like that. The signing I like, and if he can, I got a couple of good signings. So I'm gonna leave one for the sleeper, and I'm gonna call this one. I think Plaxico for the Jets, and the reason why I think that is because Sanchez needs a security blanket. And the one thing about receivers and coming back, because of the way they play the game, I think it's going to allow Plaxico to have a smooth transition back in the game. They really focus on running the football and doing that. But with that size, because he went over with the Jets, that size, he just provides that target in that sense of better than Braylon. In a sense, that he provides that target and that security blanket that takes him outside of the tight end position where that was a security blanket before. I think that helps because their need is offense and then also in the red zone, providing that kind of security blanket. And that, I think that was the one piece that they really needed to have. And I think that's a good fit for him just because of the way they play offense for him. So I think that's a really good signing. I have some other ones, but I'm going to leave those for sleepers.
Okay.
My best signing, again, we're going back to the Jets, Santonio Holmes. You know, I thought he was a guy who was really valued. I think he's tipping the iceberg of his talent. I think being in New York for another year, I think he's going to really – blossom this year and become a big-time receiver. I think he already is a big-time receiver, but I think he's going to become a top-tier receiver, and he's going to really show that talent. Him and Sanchez have a good rapport. I think for the Jets, getting him back was key to Sanchez's development. And I think also the other moves, bringing in Plaxico, I think, again, that's going to bolster that particular – I think that's going to make that particular signing even better because now – you know, with Santonio on the other side, Plaxico on the other side, and then you got Dustin Keller at tight end, Sanchez has got a pretty good amount of weapons. Plus you got, you know, LaDainian is still there. He's still probably one of the better running backs receiving the ball out of the backfield. So they got a lot of weapons. Jericho Cotchery is still there. They got a lot of weapons for Sanchez. So I think for the development and furtherment of that franchise, that was a good move to keep that consistency and keep that continuity of, you know, having your young quarterback have his number one receiver come back and having his number one receiver happy, locked up, and ready to get to work. I think that's what you want when you're looking long term as far as the development of a franchise. And when you have what you believe is a franchise quarterback, you need to make sure that his number one target is there. He has a number one target, and his number one target is taken care of. And I was in the McNabb camp up until Sidney Rice left. And for a similar reason, for a similar line of thought, I thought the McNabb move independently was a great move, but I think if you put it in the context of everything else the Vikings did, I think they shot themselves in the foot by letting Rice walk. If Rice is there, and you got Harvin, Rice, McNabb, and Adrian Peterson, to me that's a great offense. That's a great offense in the making. I don't know how they're going to make up for the loss of a Sidney Rice up in Minnesota, because Percy Harvin is, and Percy Harvin proved it when Moss was there. He proved it when Sidney Rice was there. He's an excellent number two. Yeah. I don't know if he's a number one. When Moss was there, Harvin was a monster because Moss was drawing all the coverage. When Sidney Rice was there, Harvin was getting it in. But when those cats wasn't there, he was struggling. So, you know, I think that's one thing that I've seen from Percy Harvin. And so I think that diminishes the McNabb signing slightly, because how effective is McNabb going to be with the limited amount of weapons? I can't name another receiver out of Minnesota. I really can't. I've tried. I mean, Bernard Berrien, I think he's still there. I don't know for sure. I think he's still there. Vasante Shianko, I don't know if he's got anything left in the tank. He's kind of getting long in the tooth at tight end. But, I mean, I can't name another receiver out of Minnesota. Donovan has won without receivers before, but that was when Donovan was 24, 25 years old and was moving really well. You know, Donovan, his career has had a sort of a Steve McNair-type trajectory. Hopefully his life doesn't end up as Steve's did, RIP, Air McNair. But Steve McNair was real mobile, real fluid, real quick, and then he just could not move after a couple years. And they got a similar build. They both about 6'2", heavy set, you know, big frame. But they got to a point where it was like they could not move in the pocket no more. And Donovan still has a little bit of his mobility, but he's not nearly as nimble and as quick as he was in his younger days. And Steve was the same way. He was real quick, real nimble as a young cat, and then he hit a certain point, and it was like, run. Are you going to walk for the first down, or are you going to run for the first down? Just make up your mind. So we're going to move into number two. Sleeper signings. So that under the radar, you know, we all about the under the radar here. We live in under the radar at RSG, so we definitely gonna highlight under the radar moves, because that's where we live. So under the radar move that is really gonna pay dividends for a particular team. I throw this one to D. Wills first off.
So my under the radar, and I just criticized this quarterback last week about whether or not he's going to be a bust. So I'm going to put this on the radar because my under radar one is actually, if he can stay healthy, is Todd Heap in Arizona. Because, again, with any young quarterback coming on and with Fitzgerald at the receiving core.
They got Braylon out there, too.
They got Braylon. You know, when you add Todd Heap into that red zone, and to do that, I think that's always a good thing for a young quarterback. And if he can stay healthy, I think in that division, that is the one thing that could probably make my prediction of Cobb's season, you know, go the other way. I think that having Todd Heap and having somebody in the middle of the field, Wisenhunt, you know, comes from that kind of Steeler, having that guy who can block on the edge. I think Heap, you know, kind of under the thing, is kind of a just adds another wrinkle to their offense. I like that Heap signing, so that's kind of the sleeper one.
I'm gonna jump in real quick with my sleeper one. My sleeper pick is Greg Olsen for a similar reason. Greg Olsen getting traded from the Chicago Bears to Carolina. Greg Olsen is a really talented football player. He's kind of miscast in the system out of Chicago. Going to a young team with two young quarterbacks, we all know for a young quarterback, your best friend is your tight end. And he's going to see a lot of balls. He's going to be open a lot because he's good. He's going to have a lot of opportunities. And I think he's in a position where that's going to be a move that pays that's going to pay a ton of dividends for that Carolina team. And finally, may give them a second receiving option that they've been looking for the last 7-8 years to complement Steve Smith on the outside. So I think, you know, that'll be a great move for them. They can resurrect the ghost of Wesley Walls.
you know? And I think it's going to be a good move because, you know, Clawson is going to be Clawson or Newton, whoever's starting, is going to be hitting the tight end a lot. You know? They're going to be hitting the tight end a lot. So I like that move as an under-the-radar move, a move that didn't get a lot of play nationally. But I think for Carolina, that was a must-make move. I think they needed to do something. And they have an offensive coordinator who favors, the tight end and who knows how to develop tight ends and put tight ends in the position to be successful. So I like that move. I think Greg Olsen's in for a big year.
I really like the Greg Olsen move, too. I mean, that was my, like, one of my top few sleeper picks right there, because for the same reason, you know, Devon hit on it as well, you know, with Heath. I mean, that tight end is key. For my sleepers, I'm going to go with Jonathan Joseph. You know, I talked about him a little bit last week as well, but I felt that any team that could get him was going to be a steal. And he went to the Texans. And everybody who watched football last year knew that the Texans, going into the season, they had a huge need in their defensive backfield. And I think they did a pretty solid job. They picked up another DB that'll be a good nickelback, as well as they drafted two guys that may be able to contribute right away. Another sleeper that kind of was underneath the radar was Darren Sproles going to the Saints. I was really scared to see Reggie Bush lead the Saints because, you know, that gave that Saints offense a lot of flexibility, but I think they almost upgraded with Sproles because Sproles, in my opinion, is a better between the tackle runner than Bush. I mean, that's not his strength, but at the same time, I think he does it better than Reggie Bush. He does a lot of the same things that Reggie Bush can do as well. So, again, I really like the Darren Sproles pickup in New Orleans, as well as Jonathan Joseph for the Texans.
Nice. I was going to say something. I was looking at these pickups, and we talk about Minnesota. They picked up Michael Jenkins, which played at for Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
You lose a great receiver, but, you know, he's got the physical tools and skills, you know, to kind of do it. And so it's just something that kind of popped out, you know, in terms of thinking about that receiving core in Minnesota. I don't know if that's if that's going to be someone that might be emerging, you know, just with a change of scenery. But that's another one. I want to add, because we didn't really have a category for them, because they're not really sleepers, but they're not really best signings. So could I add just – I know I want to tweak this up. Can I add it in the sleeper category?
Absolutely, man. We free-flowing.
And I'm right. Playing these two, and they were too high profile, but I think it's a change of scenery, and they're good pieces. Is Ike Albert Haynesworth in New England could be huge. And I think Ocho, as a combination in New England, for what they need – could be two huge pieces for them. Because they couldn't – so for Albert Haynesworth, they couldn't stop the run up the middle at all last year. They did not have a strong middle. It felt like they couldn't really command the run. And so if he decides he's going to play, you know, and I think the situation that they have in terms of contractual thing, you know, for New England, it's, you know, they can cut him. I mean, there's nothing they're going to lose on it. And so if he's highly motivated, which I think he might be with Belichick, I think that could be end up being a huge signing for them if he's able to get back to his old form. So I did want to add, because they don't really fit kind of a best signing. They're not really sleepers in a sense, but I think both those two pickups from New England I think could have as much impact as a lot of things we even saw with Philadelphia.
I agree. I think If I'm an NFL GM, anytime Bill Belichick calls me, I hang up the phone. I just do, cause he finna get over. He finna make a move that I don't want to compete. It's the rule that I think this is your philosophy in fantasy football. I'm not gonna make a trade with a cat if after I make this trade, his team is I can't beat his team.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? And I took a mental note when you said that to me a couple of years ago. I was like, that makes a lot of sense. Don't make a trade. Don't trade a player to a guy that's going to make his team unbeatable. You don't do that. Just don't do that.
That's why cats don't trade with me. I got to figure it out now.
Yeah. That's why cats don't trade with you. Cats don't trade with a person like Royster because she always offered them bull.
She won.
I know you out there, Tiffany.
Tim Tebow for Fitzgerald. They won't be mad at you when you turn it down.
Yeah, well, what's wrong with Tebow? He ran for 2 touchdowns last week. Oh man. So yeah, I definitely if Bill Belichick ever, if I'm a GM and Bill Belichick ever calls me, I'm hanging up, man. And have you guys? Props to the Eagles GM. This dude sounds like McLovin. I heard this cat talk on the radio the other day, man. He sounds like McLovin. And I'm like, man, you ain't never played football in your life. I'm sure of it. And he is doing his thing right now, man. He's making moves. They just signed Ronnie Brown. I mean, they and that's another under-the-radar sleeper move. Because Ronnie Brown is, I don't think he's 30 yet. I think he's like 28, but he's long in the tooth for 28. But Ronnie Brown is versatile as hell. You know, he did a lot in the Wildcat package in Miami. You bring him in with a quarterback like Michael Vick, and you do some Wildcat type shit with them too. That's gonna mess teams up a little bit. You know, that's gonna mess teams up a little bit because Ronnie Brown. And he can run. I mean, he gives him that change of pace with Shady McCoy, with LeSean McCoy, who is more of a Brian Westbrook type, you know, quick, you know, pass catching back. Where Ronnie Brown can bang, and he will bang, and he'll get those tough yards. So, you know, they're getting a lot of guys on 1-year deals, a lot of guys who are looking, you know, basically what the Eagles have decided to do is let's make every sign, and let's just make it a contract year for these guys. And we all know people ball out in their contract years. So let's just sign them to 1-year deals and make it a contract year. And we're going to get the best out of them that we can. It's the same type of deal the Patriots is doing, man. Let's get these guys in. They need to show. It's basically a contract year for Haynesworth and Ocho. Like, they got to show, but they're going to be out. And so that's how you get guys to do what they need to do. You know, that lack of security is a hell of a motivator. So we're going to slide into the next one, which is bust. Where do you see the potential for a major bust? I'm going to throw this one to D-Will. Go ahead, yeah.
I'll take this one first. I'm not even going to get going with D'Angelo Woods. I'm not even going to go there. Okay?
You sure?
Right. I'm
positive. Are you okay. All right.
All right. Because I can't resist 3 times. But, you know, I was looking at this, and the Arizona Cardinals, they gave up a Pro Bowl corner and a second-round pick for Steve Young. I'm sorry, I mean Kevin Cobb. That, to me, is too much to give up for any backup quarterback, unless his name is Steve Young. So to me, you know, I know Kevin Cobb, everybody's been so excited about him, you know, but I don't think this guy's going to turn out as well as some of these other backup quarterbacks that, you know, had all the hype and then showed well, like Matthew Schaub in Houston. You know, here's a guy who was behind Vic for so long and finally got his shot, and he did his thing. I don't see Kevin Cobb doing that. And I think Arizona, you know, we look at top free agency trades of all time. We're going to be looking at the Dallas Cowboys, what they did in that 91-92 draft, you know, and the trade with Herschel Walker. And then we're going to start looking at how the Eagles put together their championship years. You know, if they do that well, and the mainstay is going to be what they got back for Kevin Cobb.
– So what you said, D-New, is that the story, if the Eagles win the Super Bowl, will be the impact of the Kevin Call trade.
Absolutely. I mean, that's going to be what catapults posted them to an excellent offseason, man. You know, because it seemed as if the Cardinals were just, I mean, this thing had grown up, I mean, this thing had grown legs in terms of Cobb going to the Cardinals. So Orton or anybody else, I mean, it was like the Cardinals had them by, I'll say, the toenails instead of something else. So pretty much, you know, the Eagles, I mean, they were in a great leverage position, man.
I cannot argue with that analysis. I think Cobb is. You know what really I think has fueled this infatuation with Kevin Cobb, and it's amazing how I believe this has seeped into the minds of NFL front offices, but the perception of fans who play fantasy football. I think that's where people fell in love with Cobb. Because if you look at his record as a starter, it's not like he comes in and wins games. You know, at least Vince Young has won some football games. You know, he has a pretty good winning percentage as a backup quarterback. What Cobb did when he came in was he put up ridiculous numbers. They didn't equate to wins. And well, his value to me is inflated by this perception that is rooted in fantasy football. And that's why he's a hot name. And that's why when people talk about Kevin Cobb, people kind of get a little, ooh, Kevin Cobb. Because he put up some nice numbers during week 14 of the 09 fantasy football season and won somebody some bread. So I think he's a bust in waiting also. That's not my bust, but I think he's a bust in waiting. I'm going to throw it to D. Wills. Who you got for your bust, man?
I talked to you about Kevin Cobb. So
yeah, that's your D'Angelo Williams.
That's my D'Angelo Williams. Although I did say they brought him a little safety valve to help him with his transition. Can I package him as like they the Three Amigos? Y'all know the Three Amigos.
Yeah.
Receivers. Can I package him like a Three Amigos? These Three Amigos will be stocked down. Roy Williams, Santana Moss, and Sidney Rice. And part of it is three organizations that I don't have any confidence in.
Uh-huh.
The Bears, I don't know what they're doing. Seattle, I don't know what they're doing. They must think their USC moved to Washington. And and Washington, we know we don't know what they're doing. I mean, Shanahan has fallen off so much. I mean, true football folks are asking themselves. I mean, I watched the NFL. Who was it that was talking about? They're like, who did Shanahan? What quarterback did Shanahan ever groom? You know, and so Shanahan was like, you know, Michael Vick will, you know, I mean, he was saying Donovan McNabb will be all right if he'll go to the next level if he can work on his work ethic or whatever he's saying. So these are three organizations I know, and they're hinging on these three receivers. And I just don't – I've never really – other. I mean, and Sidney's stuff is about whether or not he's come back from his injury, but Roy Williams has just never found his niche. And I don't know how he's going to do in that Soldier Field cold. I can see him over there sitting with Cutler – hugging each other.
I ain't going in, coach.
And I don't know what Mike Marks is trying to do over there. So I called him the Three Amigos. I try to couple it around three receivers that these organizations are hoping will help boost them to the next level. I just don't think they're gonna do it.
Now my bust, I'm piggybacking off of the whole, I like Sidney Rice. I think he's going to be – I think he's a good player. I think he's in an effed up situation.
That's right.
And that's because of my bust, which is Tavares Jackson. Sorry, T-Jack is not the dude. Like, if you – again, I don't know what they're thinking in Seattle. Maybe they'll prove me wrong, but everything I've seen says that Tavares Jackson is not – is not your guy behind center. And if you bring him in to be your starting quarterback, Larry was talking about the fans in Miami booing Chad Henne in practice and chanting for Cal Orton. If you got Tavares Jackson as your quarterback, your fan base may be chanting for Chad Henne. All right? You may have a Chad Henne chant break out at your practice facility one day. Don't be surprised if it does. But Tavares Jackson is definitely my bust. Dude, come on. I mean, I got no faith in this guy. Nothing I've seen in Minnesota, you know, the years he was there, they were loaded offensively. I mean, Favre went up in there with his old carcass and carved out a good season and a half before his body fell apart. And Tavares Jackson couldn't do nothing with it. I mean, he had the same weapons that Favre had, and he couldn't do nothing with that team. So I don't think the Seattle team is any better constructed than those Minnesota teams were. I don't know if some light bulb went off in his head in between on the flight from Minnesota to Seattle. But everything I've seen says Tavares Jackson is not a starting NFL quarterback. And if you sign him to be your starting NFL quarterback, you are setting yourself up to fail. So, and it sucks because, again, I don't know. I guess him and Sidney got to be boys or something, because if I'm Sidney Rice, I am not trying to catch passes from this dude. I'd have stayed my black butt in Minnesota and caught passes from McNabb. I'd have went a lot of other places and tried to latch on, but I wouldn't have messed with that situation, because when your options of signal callers are Tavares Jackson to Charlie Whitehurst, I mean, that'd be good if you were Clemson. That's a good duo if you're Clemson, or if you're in the SEC or in the Pac-10, not in the NFC West. Those are not good options, you know. So talk about when you have two quarterbacks, you really have none. You got definitely no quarterbacks in Seattle.
We got some input from L Dog. He just sent me a text saying, "Dude, Buster Hasselbeck in Tennessee, he's done. Roy Williams is a buster too." The L Dog wants to comment. Those are his two. As he's watching his NFL package on DirecTV.
Word up. With the $300 credit.
Yeah. I'm highly interested how he got that. Very interesting.
Oh, yeah, he's going to have to send me just a little email, a brief description, explanation, because we're going to make that happen. So, number four, this team pick a team that made out like bandits, somebody that just ran off. I mean, the easy choice is the Eagles. The team that I think came out of this situation looking real good, in my opinion, the Carolina Panthers. I think they kept guys that they wanted to keep. They brought in guys that made sense. I think they bolstered everything around. I think they did what you need to do when you have a young franchise quarterback that you brought in. They bolstered everything. They added help on the defensive line. They kept guys from the team last year. I think they did a good job of figuring out. You know, my mom always taught me you gotta know what to throw away and what to keep. You know, and I think they did a good job of figuring out what to throw away and what to keep. And I think they kept things that are useful, that fit into their scheme and their system. They look like they have a plan. They brought in guys who fit that plan, and they kept guys who fit that plan. They cut guys loose who didn't. So I like what the Panthers did, and I think they're gonna be a little bit better than you may anticipate them being, having a young quarterback. And I actually think if they start Cam Newton and they have an opportunity to – Cam Newton has an opportunity to play because of his ability to create with his legs, I actually think they could win 7-8 games. Because I think it's that same effect that Vince Young had. Vince Young did not figure out how to play quarterback in the NFL, but he won games because he could move the chains. And at the end of the day, that's what it's about. You know, it's that Otis Anderson, move the chains, you know. You got to move the chains. And that's a quality that, with his legs, Cam Newton can bring to the table until he figures out how to play the quarterback spot. You know, they added help on the O-line, brought in some tight ends, some security blankets. They signed Shockey, too, under the radar. They brought in Shockey. They brought in Olsen. The coordinator likes to run a lot of two tight end sets. You know, they bolstered their defensive front. So they signed some linebackers. I like what they did in keeping the right parts. You know, last year they had a lot of injuries. The quarterback situation was a mess. The O-line started to flounder a little bit. A lot of guys hurt. It's the NFL, though. Everybody's a few plays away from being, you know, two or three games better, two or three games worse. We all know that. So I think they did a good job of keeping what they need, you know, deciding what to keep and deciding what to throw away. So I like the Panthers.
I touched on this just a little bit earlier. I think New England did a good job. I mean, they got strong where they need to get strong up the middle on defense. They added in some veterans in the right spots on offense. I think they resigned some. I mean, I think they just resigned Logan Mankins, getting that deal done. Solidifying some stuff. I just think, you know, what we expected about this frenzy happened. The organizations that really did well were the organizations who are just run well. And so that wasn't a surprise. But I think that's why I think New England did well, and those organizations who learning how to run themselves well. So like Detroit is developing a philosophy. Like you said, it looks like Carolina is developing a philosophy. So I think that's – but I really think at the end of the day, besides we all talk about Philly, I think New England, I just looked at it, it just hit me today. They – sometimes it's not how many free agents you sign. It's re-signing the right ones and then adding those pieces. And this year felt like Belichick's in this old – you feel like the old Belichick coming out again, the kind of Super Bowl Belichick. Coming back, like Back to the Future Belichick was working this year.
No. Hey, and Belichick is sneaky funny, man. Belichick is sneaky funny. You know he said that stuff on purpose when he was talking about, yeah, you know, I don't really Twitter or My Face or Yearbook or nothing. You know, the man is too smart to mess up. He ain't 80, is what I'm trying to say. He's not 80 years old. That's like something a 75-year-old would say.
That's right.
I don't really be on My Face like that.
I'm just watching them, and I'm thinking, everybody better watch out. And they're not.
Yeah. It's gonna be interesting to watch how that plays out in New England, because they did make some. They basically got two potential All Pros. You know, when you bring in two guys who have either been All Pros or could be All Pros, that's a big move. That's a big move.
Yeah.
So. I agree there.
I would have loved to see Reggie Bush or Sproles go to New England and be used like a Woodhead being used. I was really hoping one of those two guys would have ended up in New England.
Yeah.
And that's something we could talk about in a second, but I'm gonna take us on a quick tangent. Reggie in Miami, is that going to work? I know you talked about this, D. Wills. He was one of your guys who you felt like, you know, right situation, right opportunity, definitely has the motivation to turn his career around. Did he find that spot? Did he find the right situation?
I think so, because it's a situation where everybody needs to do well and turn the corner. And, I mean, you just heard the stuff about with Chad Henne. And I can tell you, I didn't like Chad Henne. I'm a Michigan fan growing up, and I liked Chad Henne when he was a freshman at Michigan. I mean, he was highly talented. I just felt like he looked down receivers too long. He didn't really – he wasn't really savvy with looking folks off, and had a great arm, but just wasn't able to do it. And so Reggie Bush is the kind of person that can make Chad look good, because he gives him a release valve. And he's disciplined enough to check down to someone like that. And Reggie needs that, and Chad needs him. And, you know, the coaching staff there in the regime needs to turn a corner. So I think it's a perfect storm, because everybody in that situation needs each other. You know, Miami is kind of, you know, on the verge that they need to really, you know, get back to it. So I really think, like, you know, he's got a lot of other distractions out of the way. I just really think, like, he going – in Miami, I think, is a right city. You know, we talked about Miami, and Miami is a right city for somebody like Bush. It's the right kind of city. He doesn't really have to be in the spotlight like he was in New Orleans. You know, there's so many stars and stuff going on in Miami. He can just be him. And he's the kind of cat that would play well, particularly in like a Miami or an L.A. if L.A. had a football team. He just – that backdrop is good for him. That's why I think he did well out other than getting paid out in USC. So I think it's the kind of environment that I think he flourishes in and would do well. So I do think – I mean, I didn't put him in because I already talked about him, so I didn't want to offer him up. But I feel like he's going to have a breakout year this year.
Are you taking him in the first two rounds of the fantasy football draft?
I ain't ready there yet.
I had to see if you was going to put it online real quick.
I ain't really there. I'm not letting people know my strategy yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, you usually better check, like, with the strategy anyway. You wasn't going to drop too many hits. I was just going to see if I could squeeze one out of you real quick while we was on air. You know, I'm looking for any competitive advantage possible.
Well, you like Belichick, I get you going one way. I got somebody way on the backside.
He'll do a fumble-rooski on him, okay?
That's it, that misdirection.
So let's slide in number five real quick. Give me a team. We start with Phil T on this one. Give me a team that totally effed it up, just totally messed this whole process up over the last week or so.
I'm going to go back and get my team that made out like a bandit. I didn't get a chance.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And, you know, there were a few that I really, really wanted to talk about, but in the interest of time, I'll stick to one. And to me, again, Matt Millen, the best thing that happened to the Lions is when Matt Millen left, to say it simple. So my pick is the Lions. Yes, the Detroit Lions. I like what they've been doing the last few years, man. I mean, they picked up Sue. They got Farley this year. In the draft, I think they did an excellent job. I think they had one of the best drafts. I mean, they've got three rookies, you know, that can, you know, reasonably probably start. I mean, you look at Farley at defensive tackle. I like Titus Young at the receiver position. And also LeSure. I mean, he might be their starting running back possibly. But from a free agency standpoint, you know, I mean, they started with that defensive line. And now they're starting to do things to solidify their defensive backfield and their linebacking core. I mean, they picked up two starting cornerbacks, and Chris Houston and Eric White, I believe they picked up. And I mean, I've liked those guys for a while, even when Wright was back in Cleveland. And then from linebackers, they picked up Tolick and also Durant. And so, you know, I mean, Tolick will certainly start, and Durant may start as well. So. Again,
Kevin Durant gonna play football? That's what you gonna do during the lockout? I'm just messing with you. Justin Durant, University of Hampton. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, I like what the Lions are doing, man. I mean, offensively, they're coming along. They even picked up Stovall as well. The receiver. I just really like what they're doing, especially, you know, I mean. Even the beginning of the last season when the young quarterback Stafford was playing before he got hurt, I liked the direction they were headed in there as well. So defensively, quite honestly, I could see Detroit making a big playoff push this year. And that's saying a lot considering you got Green Bay who got better as well as Chicago who didn't get better, but they still have a pretty solid team. That's saying a lot. You know, I'm thinking that the Lions may make a push to get into the playoffs.
Go ahead. You can go ahead and transition right into your old team that effed up.
All right. So the team that I didn't think did real well is the Jets. And this may, you know, be Russian Judge for you. But my biggest issue is they retained some guys. So Santonio Holmes was clearly one of the best free agent signings, okay, of this offseason. But at the same time, they didn't add a whole lot. So if they would have lost Santonio, that would have been a bigger setback. But in my opinion, they lost, like, you know, it doesn't look like they're going to re-sign Braylon Edwards. They're going to let go of Brad Smith, who, again, gave them a whole different look on offense. That was, I mean, that was a dynamic guy. And in my opinion, I'm not sold on Plaxico. I'm rooting for him. I'm certainly hope he does well. But to have Plaxico expected to step in and give you what Braylon gave you, I don't think so. So in my opinion, the Jets, you know, are a team that, in my opinion, kind of snuck by the Patriots last year. And I really don't see them getting a lot better. You know, I just don't. I mean, they brought back Cromartie. Again, their top two offseason signings were guys that they needed to keep. There were needs that they needed to fulfill. And I know one of you guys mentioned that you all were pleased with what the Jets did, but the biggest issue the Jets had last year was a lack of defense, a lack of offensive playmakers. And tell me, what did they do to build upon that? You say Santonio Holmes, well, I mean, he was already there. So in my opinion, they've kind of taken away from their offensive playmakers in Smith and what's the other guy, Braylon Edwards, and they really haven't added to it.
And I was the one who said I like what the Jets did. And this is what I'll say in defense of what I was saying. I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you. They didn't do anything to add playmakers. I think what they're hoping, the perspective I see is that I think they're hoping that a guy like Sean Green, who had a down year last year, who they were expecting much more from, takes another step as a young player. I think they're hoping that Dustin Keller takes another step as a young player. I think they're hoping that Mark Sanchez takes a step at a young player, as a young player, and they become they've all three of those guys have shown potential to be playmakers. They didn't make plays last year and they won 11 games. So I think as a team, what they were hoping on offense in particular was, okay, let's keep what we got and hope these young guys that we have at these key positions continue to develop, because they still had LT, but they're hoping that Sean Green can carry the load. He didn't do a good job of that last year. Again, by all accounts, he still looks like a pretty solid running back, and they're still going to give him an opportunity to do that. So I think they're going to stick with him because he's only in his third year. Dustin Keller's only in his, you know, fourth or fifth year. Sanchez is going into his third or fourth year. I don't know. I think third year. So I think their view of it is that they're going to let their young guys grow into those playmaker positions. But I totally feel you that they didn't go out. They didn't. They didn't go out and get anybody that necessarily was an upgrade over the guy that was in that spot last year.
I would have been a lot more excited about the Jets had they been one or two things. Had they significantly improved their defense? And again, had they got Nnamdi, that would have been the case probably. Or if they would have added more playmakers. And in my opinion, their defense stayed the same, which, again, a very solid, a very strong defense. But their offense, that was already their shaky point, in my opinion, has got a little bit weaker. But you make good points that if some of their young guys continue to develop, it could be a non-issue.
Hey, they got the big-time safety back. And then also, I would, you know, as much as I'm a Michigan fan like Braylon, Braylon dropped a lot of balls. And I think also banking that when Plaxico played, Plaxico was one of the top three or four receivers in the game. So Plaxico, I think they're baking because of his what he offers with his size. He creates the kinds of mismatches that I don't think Braylon creates. Plaxico causes you to shift the field in a way that creates offensive opportunities. I think I agree with you. Losing Smith is different because I think he was an all-purpose guy and he changed field position,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a returner, and I think. You got to see if they – teams like the Jets find a guy who can do that because that's just what they do. they find a guy who can do that. But he's the kind of guy you got to watch. I mean, it's hard to lose what he did with that because he gave you field position in a way that you don't get in other ways. But I wouldn't say they were totally – I wouldn't say them they're totally losing because I think – I agree with you. I think they got healthier. They got some key players back. That's going to make them much better, even more so on defense. And I think they got some guys on the offense who are getting a little older and they got healthier. And so I think part of their strategy is also health. You know, who did they resign and who's going to be healthy this year, I think was part of their strategy in looking at their roster. I think there's some teams who are way worse than them. And I got one. All right, go ahead and give yours, because I know who mine is.
Washington. And the reason why I say it is, I don't know what the hell they doing.
They could be on this list every year. The same way the Patriots is probably on the team that got it right list every year, Washington's on the other end.
And the only reason I say this is because they got a coach that's supposedly elite coach, and a guy who's been a GM and been in those decision-making positions. And my litmus test is when you look at the Lions, you know who they are. See, before you didn't know that. Under Matt Millen, you couldn't say that. Under this new regime, you know who the Lions are. And when they get people who fit that philosophy, right? Who are the Redskins? Like, they did all this movement. I'm looking at everybody they got, and I'm still not saying you're this. Who are they?
They on the clock is what they are.
As much junk as they talk about, that they talk about players and what players don't do and all this other stuff, I'm still not seeing, Haynesworth's going to be out of there, McNabb's going to be out of there. I just feel like they still going to be in trouble. Washington, I don't know. I'm glad I'm not a Washington fan.
Yeah, no, man, I totally agree. That to me has been a rudderless franchise for quite some time. Just no direction, no identity. I mean, they got mediocre receivers. I don't even know who they started running back, and it's Shanahan anyway, so it don't matter. I don't even know who they started quarterback. I would put money down that it's probably the worst roster in the league.
Yeah,
I would put money down it's probably the worst roster in the league. I really can't think of a roster that's worse off, where there is really not a whole lot of upside on that roster. There's a couple guys on defense who are decent, but on offense, I mean, maybe somebody help me out. Throw me a lifesaver. I got nothing.
Well, I actually think that the Redskins upgraded their roster. Now, on a scale of 1 to 10, they may have went from a 3 to a 4, but I think they upgraded their roster. I mean, if you look at guys they signed, again, they didn't get any big headliners, but, man, they picked up a lot of people. You know, ESPN says it looked like they probably picked up 7 or 8 starters. You know, Gaffney, Dante Stallworth is a guy I think might come back and do some damage this year, you know, just because of a simple opportunity. Tim Hightower is a guy, and again, they got, like, they're really crowded, but they made some adjustments to their offensive line as well with Brown and Smith. So, I mean, I actually think they upgraded. They got an issue at the quarterback position. I mean, they got a lot of issues. We can talk all day about their issues, but I actually think they did a pretty good job based on what they had available in free agency.
Yeah, I just it doesn't make a lot. And maybe it's because in the division they're in the division they're in, they got a fight ahead of them. You know, because they're not going to win at the quarterback spot, even though they claim they love their quarterback situation. I'm just wondering what they're doing. And so, but all the people who are out there available to sign, I'm just wondering what they're doing. And maybe they decide they're going to build through the draft. I mean, maybe that's part of it with some of these.
Like I said, they're on the clock.
They're on the clock. And that's part of my thing. When I can't understand what you're doing, then I got to say it. I don't know what they're doing.
What happens if Kyle Orton ends up in Washington?
I think that helps a little bit. I don't think that solves the problems they got. I think they're still going to struggle to be 500. I think best case scenario is they eke out 6 or 7 wins. Because, again, who's he going to throw to?
He's got Moss, he's got Stallworth, and he's got Gaffney. Nobody who's a true one, but you got a lot of twos and threes there.
What's the old saying? If you can't get yourself a 10, at least get 5 twos.
Yeah.
Isn't that how it goes?
When you say you got a whole bunch of twos, that means you got some folks who can't get separation. And if you can't get separation in the league, you in trouble. Your quarterback in trouble.
Yeah, I see. I feel your point, Phil T. I'm just, I just don't believe in that roster. I look at the roster and I just don't believe in it right now. Like I said, I think best case scenario, if they set the world on fire, they're gonna win six games.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a tough sell. You know, it's like you're selling a product you really don't believe in.
Yeah. You made the best.
Not enough to stick your neck out for him.
Hey.
I'm not gonna put my credibility on the line for the Redskins. so for my team, man, I got the Seahawks. Again, when you sign up to have Charlie Whitehorse and Tavares Jackson as your, because they signed Tavares Jackson like the first day of free agency, like, yo, we'll just get him before anybody else does. You know what I'm saying? Like, what was the rush? I mean, they could have got him today if they had waited. You know, I would explore the Cal Orton possibility. I'd even try to talk Matt Leinart into coming up there before I went in and signed on for Tavares Jackson. Man, maybe they was hoping that Carson Palmer would become available. I don't know. But I just, to me, that the fact that they didn't go after and try to upgrade, they knew they was going to let Hasselbeck go. To not try and upgrade the quarterback position, in my eyes, I think they may think they have upgraded the quarterback position. Maybe they believe in Charlie Whitehorse. Right now they're talking about Jackson as the starter. There were a lot of better options out there. I mean, they could have got involved in a call-up situation, at least pushed the price up since he was going to a division rival. That's what I would have done. But that's just me being a competitive a-hole. But that's what I would have done. Really not having an interest in Cobb, I'd have just jumped in so that the Cardinals gave up even more than they wound up giving up, which was a lot anyway. But I'd have jumped in just because if he's going to be in my division, I'm going to make sure that they pay a whole hell of a lot to get him. Or jumped into the Orton sweepstakes and tried to get Orton because obviously he didn't go nowhere. And that's another team that, you know, it's a tie for me. Denver effed up because now they got this quarterback situation where it seems like they want to go with Tebow, but they can't go with Tebow because Tebow is not better than Orton. And because they couldn't move Orton, they got to play Orton, even though they don't really want to play Orton. They want to play Tebow. And that to me, that just that management effed up right there. They effed up. Bottom line, they finally are starting to get a little bit of a direction, and then this happens. I think this is going to set them back for a moment because if they start Tebow and Tebow is not clearly better than Orton, they're going to lose the rest of that locker room because guys are going to say, well, this is about politics. This isn't about performance, and I could be next. Even though I'm better than the cat behind me, if they have more invested in that cat, he's going to play. And so once you start to do that, you lose a lot of credibility and integrity with your veterans in that locker room. And once you lose your vets, you lost your team.
Yeah, and I think, and it's not even like, you know, he's a Cam Newton coming in where, you know, guys have seen Cam throw and, you know, they think he has the potential of having a great quarterback. You know, some of these guys are looking at, like you said, Tebow, like, he could be a good H-back. You know,
right.
They are really envisioning what he could help in, and they're not really, if they don't really believe and see him as that quarterback. You know, I think that hurts him because it's not just about him being on a team and being able to play, but they also look at him like, you know, most people think he would have been able to help big time in other places versus Cam. Let's say like Cam is coming in, everybody knows he's playing quarterback. And they know he's young. We know and it's weird you said that because I looked at Denver. Some of their other moves look solid.
Right.
You know, it's like that's the only thing that's keeping this from being – a good offseason for them. If it is good about the new regime, they didn't draft Tebow. And so, you know, I don't know what Elway is thinking. I mean, this is a strange thing about it because Elway's part of that decision-making. So, I mean, I don't know if Elway's seen him play enough to think, you know, maybe this kid does have something, which then, you know, I got to leave it to Elway, you know, because Elway probably knows a quarterback when he sees it, but it's just weird because if he would have said we're going to go with Orton for next two years and groom, then this offseason would look much different because they did make some other solid moves. So, like you said, it's like they feel like they know something we don't know, and we'll see.
And again, my assessment of the situation basically boils down to now that Orton is in tow, he's on the roster, he's on the squad for the foreseeable future, how do they handle – the way that they handle the situation is going to really affect how that season goes. Because if they mishandle the situation, then it's a disaster waiting to happen. You know, it's a 3-13 season waiting to happen if they mishandle the situation. Because, again – once you lose that competitive integrity in your locker room where guys feel like even if I'm better than the guy, I still may not beat him out because of some BS politics, you're going to lose guys real quick. And guys ain't going to go for that. You know, veterans ain't going to go for that. And guys, it's going to make it difficult for the guy you got in there to be successful. So, I mean, not only would they set the franchise back, but then they would really – almost ruin the credibility of Tebow. You know, so not only are you undermining this season, but you're undermining the guy who you seem to think is going to be your future, you know, quarterback. So it's, you know, they got to figure this out.
It's a circus because they're even talking about Brady Quinn having an opportunity to win the position. You know, it's just way too much going on out there.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah, those are the two tire fires I got on my list. So yeah. So let's everybody, did everybody weigh in on that last one?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now let's slide into the freestyle. Let's get our freestyle on. This is a segment where we just kinda let it go. We got about 20 minutes left, so let's just flow with this for a bit and we'll see where it goes. We got comparing Tiger Woods. The Phil T, you sent out a text earlier this weekend, and you know I got to thinking about it. But the comparison of the fall, when you look at where Tiger fell from and where Michael Phelps has fallen from, and most of y'all probably don't even know Michael Phelps has fallen off, because it's not like anybody showing up at swim meets. That's just the truth. I'm not. But if you really pay attention to it, Michael Phelps is not competing at the level he was competing at in 08, where he was basically dominant. And honestly, there's a couple. To me, this story, and I'm gonna take it there. I'm gonna go conspiracy theorist real quick. But remember the cat in Canada who had the roids, not Ben Johnson, but not the doctor who was giving out roids, PEDs to athletes. Tiger was one of his clients. I don't know. Dude got busted. Tiger started sucking. I don't know. Do roids help you hit a golf ball? I don't know. They help you hit a baseball. Maybe there's something there. Maybe there's not. Like I said, is it a coincidence? Possibly. Is it connected? Super slim chance. But it's still possible. Phelps, I think, may fall into that category. Man, was he doing something? I know Olympic athletes get tested up the wazoo, but cash can beat tests. Yeah, it's possible to beat a test. And then you look at a guy like Federer. Him and Tiger was tight, too. Federer ain't really Federer no more. Federer was a beast. When Tiger was beasted, not so much. So it's a few guys you could throw into this box of about 2-3 years ago, you was unbeatable. Now, not so much. And, you know, Tiger, Federer, Phelps, they kind of all in that kind of cluster. So the conspiracy theory aside of them being performance, using PEDs, I think what it really speaks to is that individual sports are so freaking mental. I mean, like, you know, sports, I always tell kids sports is 90% mental, 10% physical. But I think when you go into an individual sport, it's probably like 98% mental and about 2% physical at a certain level. Because not only do you have to be mentally focused all the time, but you ain't even got, like when I'm on a basketball court, if I'm a little off, I got four other guys who can pick me up till I get right. You know, on a football field, if you ain't really where you at, you know, it's 10 other guys out there with you who can pick you up so you get where you need to be mentally and you get on the same page. When you were a golfer, a swimmer, a tennis player, a sprinter, you know, a decathlete, whatever you do as an individual with these individual sports, you got to lock in. And only you can lock in. You can't look to nobody else to pick you up for a quarter or to help you through a race. You got to lock in. And if you don't lock in, you don't win. And, you know, maybe Phelps' situation changed a little bit. You know, you go from being a goofy swimmer to a rock star, you know, over a 8-week period, and it changed your life a little bit, and your mental focus can wane when you got other stuff to do than jump in a pool.
Yeah, I see a lot of parallels. The thing I find most interesting is, I mean, if you look at it, Michael Phelps, over the last two Olympics, you know, he's won 14 out of 16 possible gold medals in the 8 events that he normally does. And this past weekend, he did the World Championships, and he won, I don't know, 3 out of 4 out of the 7 events he was in. And the thing I found interesting was, you know, Phelps is clearly not dominating to the level where he was before, but he's still the best swimmer in the world. So my question is if Tiger comes back, and again, perhaps he's not winning a major every year. For his, you know, perhaps he's not winning, you know, holding all 4 majors at the same time, but maybe he's still the top 5, top 1, top 2 golfer. Will that be enough for us? You know, will that be enough to say Tiger's back, or will we still be critical that Tiger's not back at the point that he was, you know, at the dominant level that he was at before?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's thinking about them as I think it, because of, you know, Phelps's big stage happens every couple of years. And so even though they just had the World Championships, it's not like the Olympics in a sense that puts you in the center stage, whereas Tiger's constantly on the center stage. I mean, even when we brought this topic up, you know, what makes them similar is that they're both dominant in their sports. They both had these issues. You know, Phelps was on video or caught on there smoking right after he won all that stuff, smoking weed. And he seemed, because of the way the sport works, it gets you out the limelight, it seems like he still kind of bounced back. I don't know if he's gotten all of his sponsorships and endorsements back, but in a way that you know, Tiger hasn't been able to bounce back. And you know, I don't know if you know, because of the nature of the sport that you can have 7 events and still win 3 or 4. That's the one thing, like, you know, swimming is a lot like track. I mean, you can win 3 or 4, so you didn't dominate all 8, but you won 3 or 4. And because of the way golf plays, you don't have that kind of opportunity. So if he wins, like, in a year, if he wins the whatever, the Memorial, and he wins all these different events and then maybe wins a British Open, you know, I think people are still going to view that he's fallen off. You know, he's got at least – over the next couple years, he doesn't win all 4, but he has to win maybe 2 a year to kind of keep him in the conversation that way. And I think he has to have a run where he might win like 2 a year rather than 1 a year over the next 4 years. So I think he has to put a couple together to make people feel like he's back in the mix. And I think if he can do that, then I think he kind of is back at that level where Phelps is right now. But I think he's got to over a 4 of our 4 major run win 2. I think that's something, along with winning some other tournaments. And I think people will feel like he's performing at where he should be performing at this point in his career.
So, wait.
So, I think with both of these guys, the perception is that at one point they were on a trajectory that had them, you know, in a pretty exclusive stratosphere, you know, with Tiger seemingly on pace before everything went down on that cold November night, seemingly on a pace to easily eclipse Jack's records. And I think now that has been a little bit, there's a little bit more question as to whether or not he'll do that. And I think with Phelps, I think...
Well, because Phelps has already done that. I mean, he did the equivalent of eclipsing Jack's records. He beat Mark Spitz or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So he,
yeah.
In some way, he's reached that pinnacle in a way that, and then he kind of fell. He started smoking weed after he did it, right?
Exactly. And that's the big thing is that, you know, when you go from being a dorky swimmer to, like, rock star status over an eight-week period, and now you come back, and now everybody knows who you are. Everybody wants to be your friend. You got access to stuff that you just didn't. You got access to stuff that swimmers just don't get access to.
That's right, yeah. He came into the whole mainstream.
Yeah, you know, you hanging out where swimmer, he's going where no swimmer has ever gone before as far as parties, nightlife, exclusivity, A-list events. You know, he's there. He's a household name. And, of course, again, being that these sports are, to me, you know, damn near 100% mental.
Yeah.
And when you get to that higher level, everybody can perform at that level. Everybody's got the physical tools. At the Olympic level, at, you know, the professional golf level, once you get to the professional level, everybody's got the physical gifts to be there. You know, everybody deserves to be in the room. It's basically who can lock in the longest. I think with Phelps, what his career trajectory was, and I think with Olympic athletes in general is, how many Olympics can you perform at a high level? I think is really what, because people have had amazing Olympics in individual sports. People have had Olympics where they just wiped out everybody else who does what they do. But it's can after you've done that, is how can you continue to do that? You know, can you continue to do that year after year? Can you show that longevity that I think, you know, when we look at great players and others, great athletes in other sports, we talk about winning championships as that hair-splitting factor amongst the greats. I think with Phelps, that longevity will be the next thing. Will he have that longevity now that it seems like his living habits have changed a bit? You know, maybe he's not in the pool, you know, 38 hours a week like he was before.
I agree with that. And, you know, and it's the same thing. It's like, you know, once you get that kind of, you know, chink in the armor, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, people start feasting. That's one thing about swimming. And then once, you know, some of these folks know that they can hang with Phelps, you know, it's kind of like a breakthrough. And, you know, they you know, it's kind of like the Tyson effect. And I think the same thing happened with Tiger. I mean, once they figure out they could be there with him on the final day, you know, they start getting it, pumping the chest up, and you wonder, like Mike Tyson did, you know, can they stand up to the moment? You feel like Phelps might have one great run in him. We're still trying to figure out whether or not Tiger has a great run in him.
Yeah, and that's that mental part of the game. That's that mental part of it, because when you're in your opponent's head in an individual sport, that allows you to be not at that 98% that you need to be, you know, mentally locked in. That allows you a little leeway to not be so good here, not be so good there, because you're bringing down everybody else's mental focus because you're just in the building, you know. And once that edge goes away and now people aren't thinking about you while thinking about their own game and they can just focus on what they're doing and know if they do what they do, they can keep up with you. Because what Tiger and Phelps had was that edge where people felt, even if I'm on my game, I don't know if I could beat this cat. You know, even if I'm going lights out and I got everything clicking, you know, at one point I think a lot of golfers feel like even if I'm lights out and I got everything clicking, this cat still could beat me and I still may not be good enough to beat Tiger. Where I think now, a lot of golfers figure, you know, if I'm at, you know, 85 to 90%, I got a shot. Even if Tiger does show up, you know, I got a shot. And I think the same thing happens with swimmers with Michael Phelps. When he got in the pool back in 08, it was like, it's a wrap. Let me see if I can get this silver. You know, unless they were Chinese, and they don't care.
That's right.
But you know, I think now they're looking over like, I can get this guy. I'm going to go after this dude, and I'm going to focus on what I'm trying to do, and that's it. And I know if I do that, I got a shot. Whereas before, it was like, not only am I trying to make sure that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, but even if I'm doing that, I still got to worry about this guy. Where now you can just focus on, if I do what I need to do, everything else is going to take care of itself, and I'll be in a position to win. And having that mental block, that mental hurdle go away, allows you to compete at a higher level. And I think that's where Phelps and Woods had an edge before that they don't have now. What I want to move on to real quick, we got about 8 minutes left. We got to talk about Randy. Is he done? Weigh in. Real sports guys, weigh in. Is Randy done?
Well,
since the last we've seen a mouse.
Somebody said it best today. Because of Randy, who he is, you can see Randy walking away, never being heard again, and then you can see him showing up in a camp. I mean, that's Randy. You wouldn't know, but if he were to walk away and never be seen again, I wouldn't be surprised. That's just who he is.
I have a dead on comparison with another athlete from another sport, but I'm gonna let y'all weigh in first.
I think Randy's gonna be back because there's so many teams out there with a need, and personally, I think it's a hype-driven retirement. And unfortunately, Brett Favre, blame it on Brett Favre. Let's just blame it on him. I mean, he has created this environment where it's okay to say you retire but change your mind. It's okay to do this, you know. It's fashionable almost to a certain degree. But, you know, Randy thinking there, you know, Randy thinking, hey, if Brett can do it, I can do it. Here. So personally, I think if a need arises, I think Randy's going to keep himself in shape and just be ready. And his production will give him another shot. I think even with the personality issues that he's had, put him in the right spot with the right team, he can still be successful, I think.
I completely agree with everything you both just said. What I want to do real quick is just throw a comparison to a guy whose career I think Randy's mirrored down to a T almost in a different sport, and that's Allen Iverson. These cats are one and the same, in my opinion, as far as getting pushed out of the game, not because they can't play, not because they can't contribute, but because of who they are, their attitude, and then the cost versus the risk reward ratio of bringing them in into your locker room, onto your team, and how they affect chemistry, and then also what you're going to get out of them if they're not in the traditional role that they're used to being in as far as being a dude. And being, I think part of it is Randy. I think at this point in Randy's career, Randy wants to win. But none of the winning teams want to take him on because of his attitude and his rep and the whole aura that comes with having Moss on your team. Nobody wants to take that on at this point. It's the same thing with Iverson in the NBA. Iverson could help every team in the league as a scorer off the bench. I have no doubt about that. One, he don't want to do that. Two, no team wants to bring him in to do that because they know he don't want to do that.
Right.
And so I think that's where you have you have two guys who could still – I think Randy could still contribute to a team at a high level. He may not be Moss, but he's still going to be better than probably – he's still going to fall into that second tier. He might be right outside the top 10 receivers in the league. And I feel the same way about AI. AI is not a top 15 player in the league no more. He's probably not even top 40 player in the league. But you put him in the right situation under the right circumstances, he can contribute to a team winning. And he can still play.
Right.
But he ain't playing. AI ain't playing. AI's retired. Randy Moss is retired. And a lot of that is because it's because of the aura of who they are and what they were and what they still think they can do and what teams need and whether or not teams want to pay them. All of those things come into play outside of can he play.
Yeah.
Moss can play. I think Moss still can play. You're not one of the greatest receivers of all time, and then all of a sudden after 1 year you can't play no more. You just ain't got nothing left. I have a hard time believing that. The same way I have a hard time believing that AI, as one of the greatest scorers of all time, all of a sudden just ain't got nothing left, and he can't score in the NBA no more.
Okay.
So that's just something when I was thinking about this whole Moss situation, I was like, this is like AI all over again, where you got a guy who can still play, but he ain't going to be playing in a traditional role he used to being in. And because of that, he can't accept being second, third fiddle. He can't take that role.
He got to end up somewhere like the Jets. You know, he got to end up with somebody, with a coach who's strong enough to let him know what it is, and he sees the opportunity to win. It's got to be the right mix if he comes back. And, you know, and he knows that a lot of people talk about a lot about respect. And so if Randy respects you, you know, he's going to do whatever. And so that's why, you know, he's going to get around. Like you said, the teams that can handle him aren't sure if they really to handle the risk and the reward. And maybe it might take an injury for them to say it's worth it.
Right. Right, but as long as you got other guys that you think you can get more out of chemistry-wise, you know, who possibly can give you similar type of production, you know, then you're not going to take that gamble. And I think that's where a lot of teams are, you know. I think that's where a lot of teams are, is that, you know, we got guys on our roster who we think can do what he can do right now at this stage of his career. We would love to have him, but not at the cost that maybe he wants, but then also not with the baggage. And I honestly think Randy realized that last year, man. I think at that press conference after the Patriots spanked the Vikings, Randy knew he messed up.
Yeah.
He knew that he probably messed up his career. I think in retrospect, looking at the way he reacted in that situation, I think he realized that he had just blew it. And that it was going downhill from there. And I think that's why he retired so quick. I think that's it. I mean, again, it's only been popping for a week. And he hung them up. You know, so we had the 90-second mark. We got time for a couple dope lines. I don't have one this week, so I'm going to throw this one to y'all and hope y'all hold me down. Dope lines, what you got?
I let you down.
Oh, D-Will, save us.
Y'all don't have one right now?
I don't have one right now.
Man. I was going to come with some cool day.
Come with it.
But I got disrupted and my energy is not coming back the way I wanted to get it covered. So all I'll say is I'll just go with the hook. I'm bad. Cool J. Cool J. That's for Randy. I'll go with the line. I'll give you the line next week.
So there you have it. Another great show. We're going to hold you down as always. We welcome you back next week. And, you know, we'll be back like we never left. Next Tuesday, 8:30 to 10:30 Central Time. Check us out. Real Sports Guys. Again, thank you for checking in. And we'll see you next week. Peace.
All right,
we off. All right, man. Good show.
Good show, gentlemen. Well, I got to try to get my daughter ready for tomorrow. I'm trying to get her out of here. So.
Okay, I'll send y'all an email about the whole fantasy football league, and y'all can send me suggestions for invites if y'all have got people that y'all know listen, and you know y'all want to send an invite to. Just shoot me an email with a list of names, and if you got email addresses, that also helps. Especially if you know they're in leagues with you and Yahoo already. It's going to be through Yahoo. So, and then I'll send you guys out invites. And then we can, you know, we can hash out the point system between the three of us over email and figure that out. So, and if y'all got any suggestions, y'all got as far as format, starting lineups, roster sizes, just shoot them out and we'll make it, we'll add those in and get the league up and going. I got a draft day right now for September 4th. It's a Sunday at 8 p.m.
Okay.
So I figure that's far enough away where it gives people get a good look at guys, but then also to see who gets hurt, see how movement takes place, and it's on a Sunday night and late, so people shouldn't be having too much going on at that time.
Hey, Devon, did you get that PayPal payment I sent you a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think I got an invoice out, Marcus. I might have one out to you, too.
Okay.
So it went to, I think it might have gone to Marissa, because I think that's what you're using.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, well, because she used my card information on a PayPal already. So I'm trying to put my card in, and they're like, you can't do that. We already got an email just attached to this card. So I'm like.
Okay.
You use my card on PayPal? You use my money? Oh, man. Marriage, right?
Yeah. So that's what it is. So I sent it to that email.
Okay, cool.
All right. Well, y'all take it easy, brothers.
Yeah, man. Y'all take care.
Yep.
All right.
All right, peace.